It's your own employee trying to do their job is actually dangerous. And it's just because these things are so unpredictable. We go in and we find use cases that nobody had expected. That's the delay, but that's also the danger.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the HIP Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Doobie, Principal Technologist Americas at Semperis. As someone that's built their career around identity, it's natural for me to assume that most people understand the importance of identity, securing it, and the authorization, access control, determining what an identity can and cannot do. Well, in the last year, in the last quarter, AI has been the accelerant for identity's importance and its complexity, difficulty, and politicization. CISOs can't just say no to agentic AI. But at the same time, they need to try to wrap some governance around them as well. My guest today is Jeff Mattson, CEO of SecureAuth. Jeff is a serial entrepreneur and globally recognized cybersecurity and AI executive with decades of experience. Before SecureAuth, Jeff served as CEO of Zage Security, where he led the company in zero trust for critical environments from energy to agentic AI. Under his leadership, Zage achieved rapid adoption across the U.S. military, global energy firms, and Fortune 500 enterprises. Previously, Jeff was co-founder and CEO of MissNet.ai, an AI-native threat detection platform acquired by LogRhythm. He pioneered decentralized analytics and machine learning approaches for real-time cyber defense, and later served as SVP of product at LogRhythm, driving global expansion and shaping the next generation of SIEM and SOAR solutions. Thanks for joining us, Jeff.
Thank you, Sean. Long-time listener, first-time guest.
Well, thank you. Also with me today is Sarah Cicchetti, Director of Product Management here at Semperis. Before joining Semperis at AWS, she led Amazon Cognito to triple-digit growth as head of product and led the open sourcing of Cedar, a new access management language. She co-founded ID Pro, the professional organization for us identity people, and co-authored NIST special publication 863-3C Digital Identity Guidelines. And if you're a follower of this podcast, she was just recently my guest, where we talked about this very topic, which is why she's here. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. Excited to dive in today.
Yeah. Well, so let's start with sort of a little bit broadly before we dive into the details. Jeff, you've said that now is a good time to be an identity. Why is that?
Yeah, it's, you know, the way my adolescent boy would put it is, you know, identity has been an NPC in the past. It's non-playing character, sort of on the side of cybersecurity, whereas now it is main character energy. You know, that the security aspects of particularly agentic AI, I think, and a lot of other people think, is centered around identity itself. And the reason for this is in the past, you know, identity was used often as a perimeter function, you know, to allow an entity or a person into the walls of an organization or into the perimeter of a zone. And then they were allowed to do whatever they needed to do. This concept of zero trust came along, and I know it's been, you know, beaten to death by marketing people, but the principle is still quite valid, which is, you know, seeing the interaction between any sort of entity and a resource that it's acting on, as every single action needs to be looked at in isolation, and a decision needs to be made in real time about whether or not it's safe to actually do that. So this is where identity meets sort of real-time security. And with agentic, I don't think there's any other way to, you know, provide not only security functions, but also just to prevent, you know, untoward behaviors from these agents. So from the security aspects, you know, Sarah can tell you there are a lot of researchers who say it will just never be possible to truly secure an agent itself to prevent it from being compromised, because, you know, for several reasons. You know, one is that in traditional applications, you know, the way we you know, build on the Harvard architecture and, you know, traditional stacks, we have a control layer and a, you know, a data layer, a memory layer. And, you know, one very popular way to compromise an application is to violate that separation and to try to, you know, jump from data memory into control memory and start, you know, introducing instructions into the flow of the application that were unintended. With LLMs, you know, the data and the control are intricately mixed. And, you know, you essentially have a single layer that's both data and control. So it's really impossible to sort of separate those two layers. And then the attack surface is, you know, if you think of something like SQL or something, you know, we've been dealing with SQL injections for a long time. SQL is a relatively constrained language. So the input to LLMs is, you know, not just English language, but every single set of human languages that the LLM understands. So there's been some, you know, some well-publicized cases where guardrails are put in that tell the LLM, you know, don't do this or don't do that in English. And someone says, do this in Spanish, and the LLM responds. The point is, we can't just go around sort of patching vulnerabilities in LLMs and expecting them to behave after that. We need a new model. And that model is designed around keeping the agent from agentically causing damage in the enterprise. And you know, beyond that, beyond prompt injection and beyond, you know, cyber issues, what we're seeing is a friendly fire, you know, from either the, you know, employees just trying to do their job, or the agent just trying to do its job, or sometimes overenthusiastic, you know, use of the agents. For instance, we work with a lot of regulated companies in the financial and healthcare space and defense and such. A very large financial company, this CISO is saying, I have this new threat vector I need help with. It's the C-suite, you know. They are now vibe coding. I had a member of the C-suite vibe coding over the weekend, and they, you know, they click through the consent screens for GitHub. They're like, what is this GitHub thing? And I just said, yes, 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 yes. And there's a data leakage as a result of that. So, you know, slightly overly enthusiastic user, you know, empowered and delighted by the tool can actually do a lot of damage, right? So we need identity. We need a stricter set of controls, and authorization has sort of been on the back burner in identity for a long time, right? It's something we've spec'd out pretty well, but we don't always do a very good job of implementing. With identity becoming front and center, authorization is even more front and center part of identity. Right. So a lot of the issues that we've been dealing with in hypothetical and identity space for a long time are now becoming the primary issues in agentic security. And, you know, I think there's nothing new under the sun here. These are issues we've known about for a long time, and we have various different approaches for solving these problems, but they are you know, on steroids and then treated with gamma radiation with the deployment of agentic, right? It's the sum of all fears, you know, along with the wonder and the delight and the promise of it. It's also, right, you know, a wonderful challenge for us in the security space. So there's never been a more interesting time to be working in identity. I think Sarah would probably agree to that as well.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really curious to dive in with you on, so you're talking about authorization, which is who has access to what. Before we can figure that out, we have to know who the who is.
Right.
And so I understand you guys have been working on registries, which is so needed. But my question for you is, like, how do you even, it seems like if you're talking about an agent, it's like a ship of Theseus, right? Like there's a harness, there's a model, there's all the context, there's all the skills, and that changes moment to moment. How do you even define 100%. That? How do you think about instances? How do you,
exactly.
Oh my gosh, I did not want to have your job.
Yeah, I think identity is much more protean, as you mentioned, in this space than in, you know, the traditional spaces we've looked at. And you know, we talk a lot about human identity traditionally, and there's well understood authentication issues. I think, Sarah, you mentioned that that quote about, you know, we've been trying to lock the bots out for a long time, and now we're trying to let
Andrew Shikiar, who's the executive director of the FIDO Alliance, said we've spent the last 10 years trying to keep the bots out, and now we're have to figure out how to let them in.
So we've actually figured out, we've done a pretty good job at this point. Phishing resistant, you know, passwordless authentication is not perfect in and of itself, unless it's operationalized well. There's just a paper from Google and Microsoft that mentioned this. And, you know, the core solution is great, but if you put, you know, the password recovery, account recovery around it, guardrails, and it's pretty good. We're really getting there on that side. Now somebody logs in and they bring in an agent or they activate an agent. Now we have just this completely new identity that is behind the gate. And, you know, I think there's two approaches that we can start with. And one is this, OAuth concept, which is, allows authority delegation and authority sharing, you know, between humans and apps and between apps and apps. And another is an area that, you know, Sarah's worked on a lot, which is, you know, in Kubernetes clusters and automated processes, we have this concept of pods or, non-human, workloads having. But I think there's a wonderful, debate going on about which one of those should prevail or how they should merge. But I think, this is a completely new challenge because humans are relatively unpredictable, but they are accountable, right? So they can try to do new things all the time. But at the end of the day, there's a human who has their job or reputation or legal consequences on the line that prevent them from misbehaving. And they also operate at human speed, which is relatively slow. And these automated processes, these microservices or service accounts, Sarah, I think you would agree that, although they can be very powerful and they can work very quickly, they're relatively predictable under most circumstances. So with agents, you have, of course you have the power and the speed of automated process with the unpredictability of a human. And in fact, we are seeing their behavior and their psychology makes them even perhaps less predictable than a human. We've actually been graphing their behavior and you see some commonalities in groups, but then there's just these very, very wide long tail behaviors, right, from some agents. So what we try to do is we look at all the popular agents and we have to be very straightforward about this. Some of them are built with more sort of internal security controls and some less. They've made that as a design choice. But also some of them have very narrow scope of operation, right? And some of them have very wide scope. So if you put those two parameters together, then you come up with, exactly how many guardrails or how stringently you need to to control the agent. So we start with that as a genetic footprint for the agents we're working with. If you're familiar with epigenetics, it's just basically how the environment interoperates with your genetics to express changes. And so we look at sort of as epigenetic profile of the agents that are deployed in our customers and see how they migrate and drift over time. And so we're able to borrow a lot from, user behavioral analytics and from traditional detection and response technologies in terms of, looking at agents and taking groups of agents that tend to act similarly. And they may be from, they may be different models underneath, they may be different agentic frameworks, but generally based on what their mission is, they tend to cluster into certain groups. And we can use that to see if a particular agent starts migrating outside of their behavioral cluster. That's a red flag, right? And we also, of course, we track their individual instances. And yes, many times they're spawned and destroyed quickly, but we do associate them with a user. And so the user to agent interaction is relatively stable over a period of time. So looking at that pattern, And looking at that as if it were sort of a virtual mega session, that allows us to see if an agent is, a particular agent, its individual behavior is straying from what it normally does. And so I think we need to start, having a better sense of doing that the way we do right now with the way EDR does with your endpoint, your laptop, or NDR does with your network. you know, we need to apply the same principles to agents.
And tell me more about that spawning. So when we hire a human to come be part of the organization, we use Skim, right? We provision them into all of our directories. They join us. They might move around while they're there, and then they leave. And we have this established life cycle for that identity. Do you see agents following that same pattern? Should we put them in the same directory with the humans, or is this going to be something totally whole cloth new that we have to build?
Yeah, I am of the opinion that when you talk about rebuilding, you know, people have been talking about the SaaS apocalypse, but I think the traditional IDP and everything along with it is going to either be relegated or completely replaced. You know, I think this completely changes, you know, concepts like Skim, where you have, you know, a natural sort of employee onboarding and offboarding process, and you have, you know, you could have hours, you know, to get things in place and a very limited number of apps. That just, you know, that's, I find that completely inapplicable to agent world, right? I think agent world is more applicable to the closest thing we see in this space is having you know, customers or, you know, third parties, external parties, log in, or partners log into an organization, do some very high stakes financial transactions and leave, right? So basically they need to be super empowered, but have guardrails on them, but you need to make sure who they are, and it's only very temporary, right? I think that's the closest model, right? So what we think, so for like our data plane, we're seeing the greatest applicability from the, you know, open banking standards, right? That actually, you know, did do a lot of heavy lifting in terms of trying to, you know, validate who these end users were, and then make sure that, you know, whatever they did had guardrails around it. And also, of course, as I said, a lot of our customers are in compliance oriented industries. So having very strong audit logs and audit capabilities is very important too. Tamper proof, you know, audit logs as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. An hour is an eternity in agent time. It's just not acceptable anymore.
Right. It's all these limitations that we had from, you know, just, you know, human slowness, you know, they were sort of implicit controls, and these implicit controls just don't work anymore with agents. You know, the time to provision, as I said, the speed with which you can do a lot of damage, you know, before you realize you've made a mistake, all that needs to collapse, right? So what we're focused on is, you know, just making sure that looking every single agent call and make sure that it is authorized at the time that it occurs, right? So this is it's a performance challenge, and it's a scale challenge, but it's what needs to be done.
Are you seeing more people doing standing privilege for agents and then restricting whether they can use that privilege at runtime? Or are you seeing them actually doing just-in-time provisioning?
Well, I mean, what we are focusing on is the just-in-time provisioning. But what I'm seeing is a lot of customers are learning very quickly. And by the way, sorry, you've probably seen this too. I mean, this is a very new problem for a lot of customers. You know, 2025 was supposed to be the year of the agent. I think it was the year of talking about the agent, right? And then this year, we've just seen agentic usage just skyrocket. And I think it's a convergence of two things. Is one is the foundational models, they seem to be kind of plateauing a little bit for a while. And then now they've just been making these huge leaps, you know, step changes in power. So they're much more powerful. And at the same time, we had, you know, OpenClaw just really did a great job of publicizing the capability and power of agents. I think, you know, I have executives that have never coded or have, you know, not coded for a long time doing vibe coding, but also a lot of them playing with these open source agents. You know, it seems like a lot of, you know, relatively non-technical people have been playing with them. And if they haven't, they've heard about it. So it really captured their imagination. And so you basically have these two pressures. One is you have the C-suite and the board saying, you know, when are you Luddites and management going to get on board and start deploying these things as a weapon, you know, and looking at the potential business benefits from it? But then you also have these employees, you know, who are saying, you know, if I can't use my agent here, I'm going to go find another job. I mean, that's what they're saying. You know, it's like, I don't want to work. You know, saying, you know, this from my cold, dead hand to, you know, pry my agent. So there is this huge pressure on this poor security team a lot of it, everyone is delighted. I think, Sarah, you've probably been to some of these conferences where they talk about agentic AI and everyone's really excited and delighted. And there's absolutely no session or talk about security. It's like, you know, come on, granddad, come on, you know, don't be, you know, Aunt Nelda who doesn't like this newfangled rock and roll music, you know? And so basically they're in a position of being Dr. No, but these incidents now have been popping up. Right. And like, as I said, a lot of them are things you would never have dreamt would happen in the past. And it is almost as if you brought this very powerful, intelligence into your organization. And we talk about like what Mythos has done. Maybe there's a little bit of hype involved in that, but you know, I was in a panel with someone from Mozilla and they said, no, actually Mythos did discover some very serious, you know, vulnerabilities. What we've seen is these agents are able to do essentially living off the land attacks internally just to accomplish their own objective. So you can put some controls, you have some natural controls in your organization that will block, you know, most people. If you really were determined, you could get around that. An agent will just cut through that like a hot knife through butter, right? So people are discovering this discovery process right now where they're just saying, you know, I didn't intend this to happen. And we're saying, look, it's not your fault. Everyone is going through this at this point. But we do have a simple way to get this type of thing under control. It's really an extension of what we've been doing for, you know, large banks and large hospitals and defense-oriented organizations for some of their critical transactions. We tell them that we can help solve this problem right now. And I'm happy that they're seeing these sort of friendly fire use cases at this point, because what's coming next is, I'm telling you, when the hacking community understands the capability of compromising these agents, there's gonna be some serious damage done as a result of that, you know? I mean, right now, like I said, this is just very recent, even the past quarter, this has picked up, but it will be a quarter or two from now before you see very clever hijacking of agents for very malicious purposes.
I was listening to a podcast by one of the leaders of Anthropic talking about exactly what Mythos could do. And one of the descriptions was not only its ability to discover vulnerabilities, but to then exploit them. And very quickly advancing to, okay, I can see, yeah, this makes sense that it would do this and do that. Two, I have to read three paragraphs and digest it to understand even what the exploit is.
Right.
And of course, it's continuing to accelerate.
Right. Before this, we had really good automated ways for looking at patterns in code that, you know, are vulnerabilities, right? But what Mythos can do and what other models can do is, you know, they can chain together multiple vulnerabilities into an attack sequence. Or they can do it, like I said, we said living off the land attacks, where you just look for capabilities within the system that are easy to work your way through. And many times, like I said, these agents are just making paperclips, right? They don't, you know, they don't realize that they're not supposed to be bypassing all these controls. For them, it's like, if you wanted to stop me, why didn't you put some real controls in place? This is really easy to get around, right?
So 100% agents are so well-meaning and they're so eager to please, right? That you can imagine Sean saying like, oh, I need access to this document. And they say,
exactly.
Oh, well, you don't have access to that document because you don't have the right attribute in Okta. And that Okta is pulling from Active Directory. And so I'm just going to go log into Active Directory and change your title to CEO. And now you have access to all the documents. Yeah. There, I solved the problem, right?
Or like, delete Active Directory. And then, yeah.
We're going to see that happening in the wild for
100%,
sure.
100%. Yeah.
Can you do prompts that say, and don't do anything stupid?
I mean, that's part of the problem, right? They don't have common sense.
Right. They don't have common sense. They don't have accountability, but they're so smart.
Right.
So, yeah. So some of all fears, but like I said, there are existing ways for us to do this, you know, being able to scale and make performant type of authorization controls that you've implemented in Kubernetes, you know, Sarah, and then others have implemented with OAuth. You know, if we can do that in real time in this data path and centralize, you know, policy control, we can solve the problem. But we really have to get this deployed quickly, as far as I'm concerned, or else there's going to be a lot of backlash potentially, you know, against Asia, which would be unfortunate because, as you say, they're very well-meaning, you know, and they can be incredibly helpful.
Well, and like you say, the humans are well-meaning too. We have these executives who, you know, they're CMOs, they're marketing people. They don't know what a .env file is and why you shouldn't check it into GitHub. Right? I mean, this is happening all
trivial
over the place
too.
Now.
Yes. Consent screen. Yeah,
that's what an old colleague of mine called spouse mode. Yes, okay, yes. But yes, and these well-meaning internal actors may have, and they use their own credentials for it. That doesn't even occur to them to not use their own credentials for it. And so if they have good access, and probably the most interesting the people that are most interested in this have got some pretty important access.
Sean, you'd be surprised how many people that think, you know, right now the default pattern is, you know, I spawn an agent, it gets all my credentials. What could be the problem there, right?
Right.
So
right.
That's the education point we're starting with here, right? So, right. But like the message we're trying to get out is saying, like, yes, deploy agents quickly. They're wonderful. They're empowering. Just put the right safeguards in place. You don't have to worry about it, right?
Right. Authentication has been well understood for a while, and we continue to refine it against threat actors. But authorization has always lagged behind. And now we're seeing this trigger the urgency of not just now, but yesterday. Let's get this authorization thing and governance, which always is the redheaded stepchild of identity and access management. Oh, yeah, right. We're supposed to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I don't think we're going to see it from the SaaS vendors, right? Like what we're seeing in the wild is that they're being pressured, like you said, Jeff, to get it out so fast. Their leadership has just told them, thou shalt be AI compliant. You just need to make an MCP server. And so they're reusing existing API.
Exactly.
Even if you wanted to use OAuth, even if you wanted to do fine grained scopes, the infrastructure doesn't exist. So there has to be some layer on top of it.
Yeah. As you know, I think you might have pointed out there, but so MCP has specified using OAuth 2.0 for authorization. You'd be shocked at how few vendors are actually supporting that in their MCP. It's a big, fat, raw API pipe. It's so dangerous. And you also saw, you know, this credential. You might have seen in the news a few days ago, some users were complaining because, you know, Google said, if you're using Google Maps tokens, a lot of small business use them. These authorization tokens are now applicable for, or API keys are now applicable for Gemini. So these small businesses that were using, you know, these map API keys, you know, suddenly they were having their keys stolen and they were used for Gemini to run up, you know, incredibly huge bills, right?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's not only that some of the APIs themselves could be, you know, hijacked or misused by the wrong agent at the wrong time. It's, you know, sometimes the keys are interchangeable for other services too. So we're really surprised when we started digging into this and solving this problem to see how prevalent that was.
So. It's amazing. I know you're working so hard to get rid of standing privilege, and they're not only standing, they're expanding privilege.
they're a gigantic tunnel, you know.
are there any particular threat models that keep you up at night?
Yeah, friendly fire. It's your own employee trying to do their job is actually dangerous. And it's just because these things are so unpredictable. We go in and we find use cases that nobody had expected. That's the delay. But that's also the danger, right? So what we do is we recommend you just, when you roll out agents, you just start them out with no privileges. You see what they're trying to do. Then you dial up the privilege, and then you can dial it up to full production. But then you monitor constantly, right? That's the only way to deal with it because of the unpredictable nature of them and the fact that they shift, they drift, and they evolve as well.
So the way that you guys think about agentic identity, the agent has its own identity, but it is also always associated with a human?
Yeah, right? And most of our customers, they have a policy of associating any non-shadow, any official agents with a human to have some level of accountability at the end. The other guardrail they're trying to put in place is, you know, they try to determine intent often by, you know, using that service account model sort of having an instance of an agent with a particular task or scope function. And that's where they get pushback. Users don't like to do that. I mean, one thing they like about agents is, you know, they can actually span across multiple, you know, domains really quickly.
Right.
So I'm not sure that will survive. This idea of like determining intent, this is, you know, it's always a big problem. And right now there's, you know, there are some proposals and vendors saying, well, you could use, you know, LLMs to determine intent of other LLMs. And that seems a little bit, you know, non-deterministic. So right now,
yeah,
you
Fox
know,
watching the hen house, right?
Yeah.
We can put guardrails in place to make, we can put, you know, authorization policies in place to make sure that they don't do any damage to any of the systems, that they don't do, for instance, you know, transactions that are too large or too many of those transactions all at once. And so we can put enough dampening and control in place so that people can play with them and do whatever they want to do, but there are reasonable, you know, safety guards around them. And they have exceptional use cases, then we could fine tune the policy for that. You know, I think one great thing about this is sort of like from policy perspective, you know, nobody in history, you know, not even the biggest IAM nerd in the world likes to write policies, right?
Hey, now.
But yeah,
don't speak for all of us.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Some do, but most of us don't, and most people don't know policy languages, but LLMs can spit out very reliable, actually pretty good, you know, policies in whatever language you want, you know, very quickly. So I think they're actually making the policy server, you know, much more accessible and democratized, you know, for the world, right? So.
Right.
One of our favorite policies for demoing CEDAR was a deny policy that said, the principle is I, and the verb is give you up and let you down, and the resource is you.
That's funny. What was awesome. That used to be called? It was
Rickrolling.
Rickrolling, yes. Yeah, we could Rickroll people with CEDAR deny policies.
So to sort of bring things full circle, Jeff, what, and you've already mentioned this, one of your recommendations, what kind of takeaways for people listening to this, what can you tell people to go do? What's a good call to action for people to take away from this conversation?
You know, I could do a blatant, you know, call out to secureauth.com, and
right.
You could take a look at the agents, their agent registry, and see, you know, how risky the ones you're running are. But, you know, you could also try out our solution. We do have a good solution that's available now for, you know, real time zero trust control of agent actions. I'm sure there are other solutions as well. But I would suggest as you do this is please get in front of this. This agentic revolution is a wonderful thing, and there will be a backlash if there are a lot of problems that come up from, you know, agents either running amok in a friendly way or worse yet, you know, they are just nuclear weapons for the bad guys, right? So, you know, please get some controls in place and get in front of this. You'll enable your organization to move faster, and you know, you'll be delighted, your board will be happy, and you'll be able to sleep a little bit better at night. As I said, we have a good solution. I'm sure there's a lot of other ones that are available as well.
And as you're working on getting in front of this, don't vibe code yourself out of a job as you're trying to figure out how all this works, right?
Yeah. We should have like a sort of a fake vibe coding area for executives, you know, which is like sandboxed and
with rubber walls.
Rubber walls, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jeff. This has been a great conversation. And Sarah, of course, exploring this frontier. They call these frontier labs. This is a frontier for sure, with all of the wild and woolly activities that happen in the frontier. Hopefully not too many more of these cautionary tales, deletions of mailboxes, destruction of databases, putting companies out of business. That one was not too long ago. Everybody pays attention to these cautionary tales. Thanks again very much.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks so much for listening to the HIP Podcast, brought to you by Semperis, the leader in identity resilience. If you found this conversation valuable, subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you have a minute, please give us a rating or leave us a review, as that really helps other listeners find the show. You can find past episodes and more information at hipconf.com/podcasts. I'm Sean Doobie.
stay secure, and I'll see you in the next one.